Kathy, coming to you with the Clinton Journal for Friday, November the 7th. This first headline, CPD officer awarded by chief. CPD chief Ben Lowers, right, read the commendation presented to Clinton officer Tyler Tippett. Also pictured is corrections officer Kaylin Burton by Gordon Woods. A Clinton police officer was awarded Tuesday for rescuing a corrections officer from a severe drug reaction. The award was presented during a city council meeting. On October 12th, Clinton police officer Tyler Tippett was at the DeWitt County Jail involved in the booking of a person who had a known history of drug use, according to Clinton Police Chief Ben Lowers. During the process, DeWitt County Corrections Officer Kaylin Burton became pale and nauseated after conducting an inventory of the subject's possessions. Burton developed a severe headache and became ill. Tippett suspected Burton had come into contact with an unidentified dangerous substance and was possibly having a drug-induced overdose. Tippett retrieved his medical kit from his patrol car and met Burton in the jail's medical room. Tippett helped Burton into a chair, and while he located the Narcan in his kit, Burton tried to stand and fell to the floor, striking her head as she landed. Narcan is a drug used to stop the effects of drug overdoses. Tippett got assistance from another corrections officer to retrieve the Narcan. By this time, Burton was in an agitated state, suffering a possible panic attack and was hyperventilating. Tippett administered two doses of Narcan to Burton via her nasal passages. Within minutes, C.O. Burton's panic-like symptoms began to cease, and she was ultimately transported to Warner Hospital emergency room via ambulance, Lors said. Burton was later treated and released. Lors said an investigation into the specific cause or source of the drug exposure and overdose-like situation remains inconclusive. He said Tippett's quick assessment of the situation, knowledge, training, swift action, and calmer demeanor resulted in a positive outcome for C.O. Burton. This defines the brotherhood and sisterhood in our emergency services, said Chief Lowers. A program for Veterans Day at the Genealogical Society, November 11th. Clinton, the DeWitt County Genealogical Society will hold its November meeting on Tuesday, November 11th at 4 p.m. in the Genealogy Room of the Vespasian Warner Public Library. Gail Leonard will present a program for Veterans Day. Members and the general public are all welcome to attend. Trump administration okays partial SNAP funding for November after judge's orders. The USDA declined to tap into additional funds, which will delay and reduce benefits. Maggie Doherty. The Trump administration said Monday it would use emergency funds to partially fund SNAP benefits for November, but would not tap into other funds to provide full coverage. This means that the more than 1 in 6 Illinoisans who rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits to buy groceries each month will get a smaller amount than normal share and have to wait days or weeks for their cards to be reloaded. That's bad news for Rockford home care aide Jasmine Winfrey, 34, who lives with her two children, Jaden and Yasmin. Winfrey says that with reduced SNAP benefits, she is unsure how she will put food on the table for herself and her kids. If I have to maybe not pay a few bills, then that's what I have to do, because my children cannot go hungry, Winfrey said. I am just very heartbroken, and I just don't know where me and my children's next meal may come from, so I am very unsure, and I'm afraid. Two federal judges issued separate rulings Friday, both ordering the administration to continue funding SNAP amid the federal government shutdown. Both judges set a Monday deadline for the administration to decide whether it would provide full or partial coverage and determine where the money would come from. The judges required that the government use emergency funds appropriated by Congress to at least partially cover November benefits, leaving open the option to draw from additional funding sources to fully fund payments for the month. U.S. District Judge John McConnell Jr., in his order, cited the availability of $23 billion in funds created by Section 32 of the Agricultural Ag Adjustment Act, amendments of 1935. The U.S. Department of Agriculture told the judges Monday it would use $4.65 billion in emergency funds to cover half of the benefits eligible households receive for the month. Patrick Penn, Deputy Undersecretary of Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, or FNCS, at the USDA, filed a declaration saying the department would not tap into other funding sources to provide full benefits to recipients. This means that no funds will remain for the new SNAP applicants certified in November, disaster assistance, or as a cushion against the potential catastrophic consequences of shutting down SNAP entirely, Penn wrote in the declaration to McConnell. The department said in the declaration that it had carefully considered using some of the Section 32 funds referenced in the judge's order, but ultimately decided against it. While acknowledging the legality of transferring funds between programs within FNCS, the department argued that Congress intended for the $23 billion fund in question to support child nutrition programs, including national school lunch and breakfast programs. Shifting $4 billion to America's SNAP population merely shifts the problem to millions of America's low-income children that receive their meals at school, the USDA wrote. There are no additional blocks of funding within FNCS available to supplement SNAP, the declaration noted. The U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth responded with disappointment to the partial funding decision in social media, referencing her own family's experience with SNAP. As someone who grew up counting every last SNAP dollar, this is intentionally cruel, Duckworth wrote. Hungry children deserve full bellies, not crumbs. Timing of benefits. The USDA said states will be responsible for recalculating revised benefits for eligible households and said it would provide revised tables to state agencies on Monday. As of the time of publication, the Illinois Department of Human Services, which administers SNAP in Illinois, did not respond to confirm receipt of the new benefit information. In its declaration, the USDA acknowledged challenges with updating benefits, predicting that it could take states anywhere from a few weeks to several months to provide the reduced benefits. Given the variation among state systems, some of which are decades old, it is unclear how many states will complete the changes in an automated manner with minimal disruption versus manual overrides or computations that could lead to payment errors and significant delays, the declaration stated. IDHS said it expected November SNAP benefits to be delayed by days or weeks. It added that the decision to fund reduced benefits will make it significantly more complicated for states to issue the funds. Benefits left on cards from previous months can still be used to purchase food as usual, according to the IDHS. The department created a new SNAP Federal Impact Center page with information and resources for those affected by the reduction in benefits, including links to food banks and pantries across the state. Food banks and pantries received $20 million in support from the state, but it will not be enough to replace the lost and delayed SNAP benefits. For mothers like Winfrey, food pantries are not a substitute for the fresh food and variety that SNAP benefits provide, things she said are important for her 9-year-old daughter and 15-year-old son. It is important that my children have a meal every day because it will affect their belly, and they probably won't be able to think straight if they don't have food or function at school, Winfrey said. Amid the uncertainty created by delays and reduced benefits, some Chicago businesses are offering free meals this week to SNAP recipients. Manny's Deli, a restaurant located near the University of Illinois, began offering free family meals to anyone with a SNAP card this week. After strong public support online, the sandwich shop set up a fundraiser, which has already received over $48,000 in donations. The move also received a shout-out from U.S. Senator Dick Durbin on the Senate floor Monday afternoon. Why has Manny's found it necessary to feed those on SNAP? Because President Trump became the first president in history to deliberately disrupt the processing of SNAP benefits, Durbin said. Thankfully, Manny's Delicatessen in Chicago is willing to do what the Trump administration is not, working to make sure that nobody in their city goes hungry. I see one obit in the paper today for Galen D. Lichtenwalter. Galen D. Lichtenwalter, 95, of Clinton, passed away at 10:58 a.m. on Friday, October 31st, 2025, at Goldwater Care in Clinton. Graveside services will be conducted at a later date at Oak Park Cemetery in Clinton, with Pastor Daryl Howard officiating. Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the Clinton United Methodist Church. A 74-year-old military veteran, Elmer Clark Jr., is on hospice. He's unaware if he will make it to see December. So, to still be able to spread cheer in an attempt to give some joy, he asked Dollar General Market in Clinton if he could be their Santa this Halloween to hand out candies while he was still able to. He was at Dollar General market for Halloween to hand out candy. And there's a really good picture of him in his Santa suit, beautiful suit, too. Under law enforcement, citations, 10-20-25, Kelsey Hall, 33. Clinton was issued a citation for disobeying a stop sign. 10-26, Brandon Henley, 44, of Clinton was issued a citation for operating an uninsured vehicle. Henley was issued a notice to appear. 10-26, Emily Fuquay, 37, Country Club Hills, was issued a citation for speeding. Arrests, 10-24-25, Joseph Tuhill, 42, of Clinton, was charged with violation of a civil no-contact order. Tuhill was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. 10-25, Zachary Barton, 27, of Clinton, was charged with criminal trespass to motor vehicle, burglary motor vehicle, and aggravated resisting or obstructing a peace officer. Horton was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. In the DeWitt County Sheriff's Office, October 24th through the 31st, Caleb Friesland, 23, of Clinton, was issued a citation for speeding, 71 miles per hour in a 55 miles per hour zone. Thomas Knapp, 52, of Bonneville, was issued a citation for speeding, 74 miles per hour in a 55 mile an hour zone. Investigation into the scene of an accident, which occurred at approximately 10 o'clock on 10-27, revealed that Carol Shoemaker, 60, of Clinton, was traveling northbound on Illinois Route 48 when she failed to make a complete stop at the intersection of Illinois Route 48 and Illinois Route 54. According to the witness and the driver of Unit 2, Ronald Ahrens, 60, of Melvin, Shoemaker rolled through the stop sign into the path of Ahrens, which was eastbound on Illinois Route 54. In this action, Ahrens was unable to avoid Shoemaker and struck Shoemaker near the driver's side door window, which was a large RV. Shoemaker suffered damage to the driver's side of the RV along with the driver's side front tire. Ahrens sustained heavy front-end damage as a result of the collision. Ahrens' vehicle was towed from the scene. Shoemaker was pulled off to a parking area along Fullerton Road to be towed at a later time. Shoemaker was issued a citation for failure to yield or stop or yield intersection. Shoemaker was released with a required court appearance. Daryl Dunbar, 45, of Streeter, was arrested on a DeWitt County warrant charging him with driving under the influence. John Selner, 39, of Waynesville, was arrested and charged with driving under the influence. John Selner, 39, of Waynesville, was arrested and charged with a violation of order of protection. Bad Luck, On Point by Richard Koritz. Do you ever have those periods in life when you wonder what will go wrong next? The past 2 weeks have made me question every morning when I awaken if I should just go back to sleep and skip the day. Then I stop and think about how bad it could have been and how fortunate some bad situations turned out. You have had those moments, but here is the latest saga of my 2 weeks of tension in the household. 2 weeks ago, a friend passed away, and his services were in Mount Vernon. Ivy and I traveled 150 miles to Mount Vernon for the visitation. We traveled on some country blacktops for several miles. The area is known for its deer population. We saw no deer and traveled back to our home in rural DeWitt. We made it for 149 miles. Then Bambi came out of a dark spot and charged across the road, only to meet her demise on my left bumper. The frustration of having an accident a mile from home simply drains one of energy. The bright side is that no one, save Bambi, was injured, and that's the blessing. This past week, we had some extensive water work done on our well system. Our well is on the Muhammad Aquifer. For you town folks, that means we have methane in the water, iron and other junk is also present. Our water system is simply a miniature water treatment plant. Only its costs are not minimal, but the processed water is great. It's early morning last week, and I hear what sounds like shower water hitting the walls. Ivy is not in the shower, and I see her in the living room. I asked if she had turned on the shower in the other bathroom as I had heard water. She said no, and she thought I had turned on the water. We both gave each other that look that says, "We got a problem." I made my way to the basement and our fancy water system had blown a fitting. The well pump was doing its job and pumping water to refill the treatment system. I got the pump shut off and called the water company. The serviceman got there within the hour expecting to see an inundated basement. His worst fears were erased when he saw the system and realized that the original builder had built a 6-inch retainer wall around the water treatment system and there were dual sump pumps here to carry the water away. He fixed the fitting and the system is now working just fine. Yes, your well openly pumping water into the basement is not what you want. but the backup pump system saved the day and a lot of money. A bad situation, but certainly much better than I was thinking when I got the water shut off to begin with. We were also home and able to address the problem before it overwhelmed the sump pump. Some friends of ours were gone on vacation when their toilet overflowed and leaked into the basement. They had thousands of dollars in losses and a significant amount of time in fixing the problem. We were blessed in going from problem to completed repairs within 3 hours. I'll take that. Then we come home this past Sunday night. I had taken our youngest son to Midway to pick up his friend. No big deal. I dropped him and his friend off at his house in Decatur at 10 p.m. and started home. I decided to not take 51 and 54 home because I was paranoid about the deer near the power plant. I took I-72 and 48 home, or at least I tried. 2 miles east of the pilot truck stop, reincarnated Bambi appears in my headlights with renewed suicidal ideations. I lose all vision as my headlights are crushed and manage to use the rumble warnings on the highway to guide me to a stopping spot on the shoulder. This car is now totaled. I was certainly not happy with the situation and being out of the car. Then a thought struck me. Nobody got hurt. Everything that was damaged can be replaced. 3 issues of bad luck in 2 weeks span, or was it? I admit that I can be a cynic and often see the negative in advance without seeing the positive. I don't wish any of these calamities on anyone. They are a pain to deal with, but they made me realize the big picture. Life is about living and learning through events. We don't always get to choose the events. We do get to choose how we address them. Life has been good to my family these past 2 weeks, regardless of the miscues. What were the pluses and minuses in your life over the past weeks? I suggest we need to be grateful for the positives and work through the problems as they will pass. Have a great week. Richard Kortz is an Illinois native, attorney, and former DeWitt County State's Attorney. Lady Maroons finished season with regional loss by Mark Rogers. Warrensburg. The Clinton High School CHS Lady Maroons volleyball team made it to regionals this year and met up with the Prairie Central Fairbury Lady Hawks. The teams appeared closely matched on paper. The Lady Maroons were 15-19 on the season, and PC had a record of 18-16. Both teams had played the same opponent numerous times during the season, with both winning and losing to the same teams. However, when it comes to tournaments, anything can happen. The Lady Maroons found that out when the first set of the evening's match. The Lady Maroons were in contention for the first 8 points, but the Lady Hawks went on a 7-point run, followed by a 6-point run, and the Lady Maroons were overpowered by the opposition's constant spikes and kill shots. The Lady Maroons also mishandled numerous sets and shots. The first set went to the Lady Hawks 25-13. The second set appeared more promising as the teams were even through 14 points. The Lady Hawks then swooped in with an 8-point run that put the Lady Maroons in a hole they didn't have enough time to completely dig their way out of. Clinton did make a valiant effort but lost the second set 25-19 and the match 2-0. The Lady Maroons ended one of their best seasons in several years at 15-20. With only 3 seniors leaving the team, they're looking for great things to happen in the coming season. Annual Candlelight Tour illuminates life at Homestead Prairie Farm, in Decatur. Experience the Homestead Prairie Farm after dark during the annual Candlelight Tour on Saturday, November 8th. This special event open house will be held from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Rock Springs Conservation Area. You may visit any time during those hours. Electricity and modern conveniences were not always at our fingertips. Glimpse what an evening in the 1860s was like at Homestead Prairie Farm. Lit up by candlelight and lamplight, as interpreters in period clothing guide you through the home. After the tour, stop inside the home's kitchen for some hot apple cider and cookies before heading into the wood shop. Free for all ages, no registration required. Homestead Prairie Farm is a living history site that portrays 1860s rural Illinois. Built around the historic Trobal Good House, the site includes an heirloom vegetable garden, herb garden, and a woodworking shop. Homestead Prairie Farm opens for tours every Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. From June through October, admission is free. Rock Springs Conservation Area is located on the southwestern edge of Decatur at 3939 Nearing Lane. To get to Rock Springs from Decatur, go south on Route 48 and turn west onto Rock Springs Road, or go south on Wickles Road and turn east onto Rock Springs Road. Watch for signs. Plenty of parking is available. Museum carriage rides begin in November. horse-drawn carriage rides under the stars at the C.H. Moore Homestead and DeWitt County Museum. On the evenings of December 5th and 12th, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., horse-drawn carriage rides will return to the C.H. Moore Homestead and DeWitt County Museum for the holiday season. This will mark the third year of the popular holiday event. Courtesy of the DeWitt County Museum Association, discounted carriage ride ticket prices will be as follows. Ages 13 and over, $5. Ages 5 years to 8 years, $3. And ages 4 and younger, free. Tickets will be required for each person to board the carriage. Beginning November 12th, carriage ride tickets can be purchased at the C.H. Moore Homestead and DeWitt County Museum, 219 East Woodlawn in Clinton, or via credit card by calling the museum at 217-935-6066. Tickets cannot be reserved by leaving a voicemail during regular museum hours, Tuesdays through Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sundays until all tickets have been claimed. A limited number of tickets will be available on a first-come, first-served basis. No more than 6 tickets will be distributed to any individual, family, or group. Christmas Under the Stars candlelight tours and extended museum gift shop hours will also be taking place on the same nights as the carriage rides, so plan to spend the evening with us. The first of the museum's candlelight tours will take place November 28th, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Doors close at 7:30 p.m. and will continue each Friday evening through December 19th. University of Illinois Extension responds to rising food access needs. University of Illinois Extension is responding to increased demand for food assistance amid the ongoing government shutdown and SNAP benefit disruptions. Publicly available resources are being shared by Extension to help Illinois families access food and to support local donation efforts. These tools also assist legislators, local government, and organizations in promoting food security during this challenging time. Available resources for Illinois families. Assistance with finding food. The Find Food Illinois map is an effective tool that helps residents and their families locate food assistance by zip code, including nearby pantries, meal sites, and other resources. The map is accessible in English, Spanish, and French. Go to illinois.com/findfoodill for details. Food donation options are available for individuals and groups looking to support their local communities and families. Resources include guidance on donating excess household food and information about the Hunters Feeding Illinois Deer Donation Program. Learn more at extension.illinois.edu/food donations. How to donate food. Use the Find Food Illinois map to locate a nearby pantry or contact a regional food bank for larger donations. A pantry staples list and other resources are available to help guide donation choices. For more information or questions about Illinois Extension's Family and Consumer Service Sciences resources, including SNAP education, please contact Jennifer McCaffrey at jmccaffr@illinois.edu or Trinity Allison at trinita@illinois.edu. The History Almanac, 1967, U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson signed a bill establishing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. 1967, the U.S. Selective Service Commission announced that college students arrested in anti-war demonstrations would lose their draft deferments. 1973, New Jersey became the first U.S. state to permit girls to play on Little League baseball teams. Also in 1973, the U.S. Congress overrode President Nixon's veto of the War Powers Act, which limits a chief executive's power to wage war without congressional approval. In 1983, a bomb exploded in the U.S. Capitol. No one was injured. In 1985, the Colombian Army stormed the country's Palace of Justice. The siege claimed the lives of 100 people, including 11 Supreme Court justices. The palace had been seized by leftist guerrillas belonging to the April 19th movement. In 1987, Tunisia's president Habib Bourguiba was overthrown. He had been president since the country's independence in 1956. Sugar Ray Leonard knocked out Donny Lalonde in 1988. In 1989, L. Douglas Wilder won the governor's race in Virginia, becoming the first elected African-American state governor in U.S. history. In 1989, David Dinkins was elected and became New York City's first African-American mayor. In 1989, Richard Ramirez, convicted of California's Night Stalker killings, was sentenced to death. And in 1991, Magic Johnson of the NBA announced that he had tested positive for the virus that causes AIDS and that he was retiring from basketball. And in our remaining time, I want to read the listing of the Saluting Our Veterans coming up for Veterans Day. Captain Dennis A. Pignotti from Lexington, Illinois, U.S. Navy 64, retired, U.S. Navy 1964. Tours included but were not limited to flight school, U.S. Kitty Hawk during Vietnam, VP-47 in San Jose, California, Okinawa, Japan, National War College in D.C., Pentagon, D.C., Anti-Submarine Warfare, Azores, Portugal, Captain of the Navy, and Deputy AD at the United States Naval Academy. Victor Fair, Farmer City, Illinois, 82nd Airborne Division of the Army, served from March 6, 1958 to December 7, 1959. General Gene O'Grady, U.S. Navy Seaman First Class, 1943 to 1946. He graduated from the University of Nebraska with the GI Bill and returned to Illinois for employment as an advertising statesman at the Daily Pantograph. Paul Peterson served from September 16, 1920 to July 14, 1992. Born in Monticello, Illinois, PFC, U.S. Army, trained at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. He was in the European Theater, World War II, Tank Destroyers, Battle of the Bulge, and a retired body and fender repairman at Pete's Body Shop. Michael L. Peterson, September 2, 1948 to September 5, 2017. Born in Monticello, Illinois, A-5 U.S. Army, trained at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Served in Vietnam for a year. 4th Psychological Group, Illustrator, Stars and Stripes, Bronze Star recipient. Robert T. Paquitas, U.S. Navy, ET-1 SS Submarine Qualified, 1984 to 1997, USS Trepang, USS Bluefish, Navy Commendation Medal, Navy Achievement Medal, Kuwaiti Liberation Medal, Expeditionary Good Conduct, and National Defense Service Medal. Donald R. McKinley, U.S. Navy, Medic for the Marines in Vietnam, trained at the Great Lakes Naval Base, earned 2 Purple Hearts, returned home from Vietnam in 1970, but lived with side effects of the war for the rest of his life. He supported fellow wounded warriors and was active in the American Legion and VFW. He was 100% disabled from his injuries and succumbed to COVID in 2021, just prior to his scheduled honor flight in July. Sam Morrison, branch of the Service Navy, rank Captain, Executive Officer, Aircraft Carrier, John F. Kennedy. Present address, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Dates in the service, 2001 to present. Tours of duty, 6C tours, is an FA-18 pilot, including operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. James F. Rogers, deceased, branch of the service, United States Marines, Sergeant. Served in the mid-1940s and served a tour of duty in the Philippines. James Mark Rogers from Clinton, Illinois, branch of service, United States Navy, was an E-4 hospital corpsman, 3rd class, trained at Great Lakes, dates of service, 67 to 71, served in the Mediterranean Sea in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and Vietnam. Justin Fentress from DeWitt, Illinois, Army National Guard, Sergeant E-5, 1993 to 2003, trained at Fort Benning, Georgia, and Operation Enduring Freedom was his tour of duty. That's about it for this week. I hope you have a good weekend. We'll be back with another issue of the Clinton Journal next week. This has been Kathy reading for you on November the 7th, 2025. Have a good weekend.